This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene today. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector globally. Join us every week as we explore what makes the European Union a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world today. Okay, let's roll.
Hey guys, welcome to Breaking Banks Europe. I am Matteo Rizzi, the executive producer of the show, and today is one of these formats where we zoom in on a particular ecosystem. And today's ecosystem is Portugal, which happens to be also my home country for the past 3 or 4 years. I'm here with João Freire de Andrade. And João, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Matteo. It's a pleasure to be with you in the show and speak a little bit about the Portuguese fintech.
So, João, you have seen really the rise and the intensity of this fintech ecosystem in Portugal growing in the past few years. So, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and also, you know, who are the players and how did fintech penetrate the market in the last couple of years?
Oh, perfect. So that's a super broad question. Starting by myself, like I'm running Big Start Ventures, fintech VC, based here in Portugal, but investing across Europe, typically in B2B startups. Regarding the, I'm also president of Portugal Fintech, something we created to help or help actually keep growing the momentum around fintech that you mentioned. And I'm also lecturing fintech nowadays at Católica University. So yeah, in a nutshell, pretty much about myself. Regarding the rise of the fintech in Portugal, that's a really, really big question. Nevertheless, we saw very interesting movements. Like I'd say we can't speak about fintech alone. Like I would say like the tech scene, the startup scene grew a lot like since 2012. Actually, I think it's not just because of the local talent that were working in other types of companies that during 2012 kind of woke up and because of this financial crisis started also working for startups. And we saw like, a first wave of entrepreneurs starting very interesting companies. Look at companies like the unicorns nowadays, like Feedzai. Feedzai is not a unicorn yet, but OutSystems, TalkDesk, companies like Cedars, companies like imagine Farfetch. So it's lots of very interesting companies that started a couple of years ago and brought a very interesting momentum into the tech scene in Portugal. Of course, the Web Summit was also something interesting, kind of to, let's say, give a little bit more international exposure to the tech scene in general. But again, the movement was already happening. It's much more because of the local people, because of the mentality that swapped a lot, and also because investors starting betting in local companies. Look at the cases of, imagine, of Uniplaces or Unbabel. It's very interesting in tech in general. And I've purposely not spoke about just fintech, because I think it's important to state that it was kind of a tech movement in general. Nevertheless, fintech also happened a lot. It's very interesting to see that companies like Feedzai, like James, that were kind of some of the most interesting fintechs in the space, grew a lot and actually kind of opened the way in the fintech scene.
I just wanted to build up on what you just say, João. And it's true that, I arrived in Lisbon at the end of 2014, but only took residency, a bit later. And what I observed indeed at the beginning was, thanks to the Web Summit, right? And, our European listeners, they certainly are familiar with it, but it's 100,000 plus sort of events that I don't want to say that transformed, but certainly helped to transform the tech scene in Portugal, particularly in Lisbon. And I wanted to ask you the fact that you mentioned like single startups, you know, together with like the tech scene. My impression was, but correct me if I'm wrong, that since like 2015 or 2016, the ecosystem wasn't really that developed, right? So it was like a very nascent and vibrant tech scene. Some of the fintech startups that you know today are like multi-hundred millions, but back then, you know, all you know, the banks, typically the regulators, you know, even the VCs, you know, I didn't have the impression that the full fintech ecosystem was formed until 2-3 years ago, which is you know, sort of naturally, you know, a little bit later than more developed ecosystems like, you know, Luxembourg or London or Amsterdam or, you know, these type of places. Would you join my point of view?
Oh, yeah, totally. I think you were 100% correct. Like, and it was like the tech scene, I would say it was developed, but the fintech in specific was not so much. So I totally agree with you. Imagine like the first, let's say Big Start Venture was the first dedicated VC to fintech or fully dedicated. It just started investing in 2016. So because previously to that, like we had very interesting people investing, but let's say spread around. So generalistically, so you just start gaining this type of specificities and people targeting a specific area when you start having momentum. It was not just because that we started Portugal FinTech in 2016. It was exactly because we had part of the ecosystem that we wanted to fix. Like Portugal FinTech is constituted also by investors, by entrepreneurs, by people from the industry, lawyers, consultants. So basically, it was with the objective of fixing parts of the ecosystem that you mentioned at the time. Imagine one thing that was pretty clear, and I think Web Summit helped on that. It was changing the mentality of the incumbents, because there's a very interesting characteristic of the Portuguese market, since it's not a big economy in terms of number of final consumers, and not a very let's say average GDP per capita when compared with other countries of Europe. Like the majority of fintechs focus on B2B and focus global since day one. So nobody's thinking of the Portuguese market. But if you are selling B2B, it's kind of a trap, because like international players will ask you, but if you got such a great technology, why don't you sell to your local players? Because majority of local players, there were a couple of problems. One of them was the mentality itself. Like we were still a little bit not cooperating so much with startups. And the second problem was also because of size, right? Because to justify one innovation, one fixed cost to a smaller size of customers, it's harder. We saw like very interesting situations of insurers trying to pay less here than a proof of concept for some Portuguese fintechs at the US. So, but this mentality kind of swapped a lot. Like everybody's thinking now in an open mentality, like leveraging the good technology of the startups, but also with let's say applying it on good use cases in a partnership mode, so not just like trying to extract value from the startups and not giving anything. Like, see, it's much more. So the mentality swapped a lot, and I think Web Summit helped. Like Portugal FinTech is doing this education for a couple of years now, and it's being quite successful. Like lots of people, like from law firms, card schemes firms, consulting firms are also helping in this movement. So it's going pretty interesting. And I think incumbents acknowledge that there's lots of talent on the startups. People are super incentivized and agile. And fortunately, technically, legacy systems still there, but connections to legacy systems such as open APIs or at least web services, a little bit more focused on the core products that enable the startups to kind of help, rather if it's on the distribution or even on the way you set up or you, let's say, you organize the products, it's happening much and much more. And something you said, I think it's consequences of this. It's basically like talent started really willing to work at startups, so acquisition of talent is easier for startups. Another interesting thing that you also mentioned was regulators. Like, we've done a very interesting work, and it was a pleasure to work with Matteo on that, also with you on that, on the subject of the Innovation Hub. So it's not properly a sandbox, but it's a communication channel between any startup, or let's say any innovator, because incumbents could also use that, and the regulator, which was very interesting in the sense that it was not just the Bank of Portugal, it was also the Markets Authority and the Insurance Authority. So it was kind of one-stop shop for any regulatory question in one single place, which was very, very interesting. And we had like four times more people looking for slots in the program than the available slots. It was 30% international companies that want to come here, kind of understand how they can be regulated by design here in Portugal and then get back to their local countries using the passport. So very, very interesting movement here. And it was interesting to see that Portugal FinLab like jumped not just the local reality, but also to European reality. And because this was kind of a good consequence, because people started seeing like those multi-million companies raising from the tech scene in Portugal. They started seeing strong fintechs in the market. They start to see talent. They start to see good living conditions. They start to see good regulatory landscape. So investors also came. And now we see international VCs, such as from UK, from US, from France, entering in pre-seed stages here in Portugal. Like, I would say for the multiple, it's growing a lot, but it's interesting. It's a good confirmation of that. So I think it's building up a little bit the very important, building blocks of a fintech scene.
Indeed. So before like diving in into like what's your like daily job, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about the investment scene. But before it, like one question or one particularity, which I think is relatively specific for the Portuguese market. Actually, since I arrived in Portugal in a stable way, say 3-4 years ago, banks in Portugal are perceived as the innovators, or at very least, they are perceived as the one holding up the sort of whatever new comes to the market. And it's not, they're not stealing anything. On the contrary, actually, I do believe that when you think of the way that the Portuguese market is organized as far as payments, for example, are concerned, on the way that, or the way that, for example, the multibanco network is organized. I was pretty amazed. I mean, the way that, for example, you can, go to any ATM and do any like offline payments, with the code that you receive when you try to make an online payment. This thing that seems trivial, in many countries, it does not exist in most of the, in the rest of Europe. And in Portugal is like a day-to-day life for a while already. So my question is, first of all, describe a little bit, this ecosystem, the payment ecosystem, and, how banks sort of came together, because you're in a very good position to talk about it. And then also, maybe share with our auditors, what is the role of, how do you see the role of the banks, right? Because in most of the cases, there are either the detractors or the pushers, the enablers, but always, a main player when it comes to talk about innovation and how fintech is playing a role, right? So, tell us a little bit more about it. Sorry, my question was a bit long, but you know me by now.
No, perfectly got it. Just to say that, yeah, totally understand that. Yeah, and basically, there's a company called SIBS, which is held by the majority of the banks. And it's true that a couple of years ago, they were really pioneers in the ATM reality that you just mentioned. And also, not just that, like also in mobility, like they were in a joint venture to do automatic toll opening using Via Verde, and they were pretty innovative. And even like in the recent years, they've brought two very interesting innovations to the market. One was the NBWay, which is like the biggest wallet. It's not technically a wallet, but let's say the peer-to-peer payments and much peer-to-merchant payments, so let's say mobile payments functionality, and also the PSD2 open API, they were able to gather the majority of banks. So basically, that's a very interesting characteristic of the Portuguese market, that you can just connect to one API and you automatically are connected with the majority of the banks. So it's not like the other markets that you have to connect with each bank API. So this is an interesting characteristic of the market, which is very good for fintechs, you know, because now on top of that, you can start with one single integration, you can kind of serve all the customers. It's already happening. Regarding the banks being the pushing innovation, yeah, that's true. This was interesting, but not anymore. I would say, like, yes, of course, banks are still doing things, some of them through SIBS, some of them doing themselves alone, especially because payments, yeah, it's true that it's very standardized offering, but imagine in wealth management and SME banking and et cetera, like there's lots of things to do alone, so not integrated in this kind of syndicate, but it's happening. And it's interesting to see that sometimes it's pushed or in cooperation with fintechs. If you think it's interesting, then I can give a couple of examples, but in Locker, it's cooperating with lots of banks and the digital onboarding, like doing one of the most advanced digital onboardings in Europe, like just even with OCR, with biometrics, with very good UX, connecting with the bank and managing then the identity and reusing the identity with ADA certificates to sign more contracts. Example of, imagine, Epi, local so aggregator of bank accounts, but not just bank accounts, also like tax authority, social security, to imagine you want to do a very fast journey on the consumer loan, and you can have all the data in a couple of seconds, so much more advanced than the typical just PSD2. I think it's a little bit PSD3 reality, and they also gather other things like credits and bonds, equity, funds, etc. So it's another interesting example of guys cooperating a lot with the banking sector. And imagine switch payments very, very growing a lot, and it's substituting part of the payments infrastructure. So you see a couple of interesting examples. And I'm always speaking about the banking side, but this reality also happens on the insurance side. So in a nutshell, I would say, yes, it's true that banks play the important role. It's also true that SIBS played an important role, and but now we are seeing not just local startups innovating on top of this infrastructure, but also banks cooperating with them to promote more products, and also international companies entering here. It's not just because the Portuguese per capita are one of the biggest users of companies such as Revolut or Number 26. People are really open to those type of innovation. And yeah, it's also interesting to see that we already see some local banks doing some, let's say, neo banks, or let's say a new offering much more similar to these neo banks by themselves. So in a nutshell, yeah, we still see innovation a little bit from everywhere, but it's not a monopoly of the banks anymore.
Great. João, last quick one on the investment side, you know. So you are operating the first actually dedicated, fintech VC in town. How do you see, how easy it is today for a Portuguese fintech to raise funds? What is the gap? I see the situation like improving a little bit, but what are the challenges? And maybe also, again, with the challenge of we have a couple of minutes left, but this Portugal is not just Portugal, right? Because Portuguese-speaking market, if we talk about like Angola, São Tomé, Guinea-Bissau and Mozambique, and of course, you know, Brazil on the South American side. I mean, the opportunities are actually, you know, much bigger, right? When you think about, you know, what Portuguese opens you up and how present is this potential expansion when a VC is thinking in investing in a Portuguese fintech?
No, yeah, thanks for the question. I think number one, landscape, and it's completely different. Like 4 years ago was much more difficult. As I said, like I think like having good examples, good entrepreneurs, actually good exits helps showing that it's interesting to invest on the Portuguese tech. So as I said, like now I see French VCs leading pre-seed, so PowerPoint stage ideas in Portugal. So it was completely unthinkable when I started working in this area, like 2012. It was crazy to think that, but it's happening and it's very interesting and people feel confident, maybe because of language skills of the average citizen, the average developer, anybody like could speak very good English. So that's something that kind of helps the connection with other countries. And what you mentioned regarding geography, yes, it is true. Like Portuguese speaking countries, it's a much bigger, like the biggest economy of South America. It's Portuguese speaking economy, Brazil. But I would say like we have very good examples of tech companies entering Brazil. But I would say like the Portuguese entrepreneur, he didn't get in his mind thinking of entering the Portuguese speaking countries. They're thinking global day one, like, and it's sometimes it's easier and it's strange, but enter the UK market, the US market, then some other European markets, and even those Portuguese speaking markets, because since they are doing a global product since day one, they are not thinking of that exactly. Nevertheless, in B2B sales, as you know, sometimes very important, the training, the capacity to contact with the local people, integrating. And it's a competitive edge for Brazil and for Portuguese-speaking countries in Africa. Why? Because it's still very important to have Portuguese-speaking lecturers and during the workshops, helping installing and maintaining the services. Even though sometimes, or the majority of times, it's shipped through cloud or something, but it's still a very important thing. Regarding the VCs, I think VCs, as you know, like you need a 10x multiple. So just thinking of these markets, yeah, of course, Brazil got that dimension to be the potential to do those 10x. But if you just think of Portuguese-speaking countries, it's limited when compared with the total potential of the space, of that technology itself. So I would say not just entrepreneurs, but also VCs, they look at the Portuguese companies, thinking of a global perspective, not just the Portuguese. Nevertheless, the Portuguese-speaking countries are a very interesting plus.
João, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to have Marta after a short break. Thank you very much again for being with us. And we'll talk again soon to check how the Portugal fintech ecosystem is doing.
No. Just invite you guys, and thanks a lot to pass at the Fintech House. So it just opened at the end of January. It's a 5 floors building in the center of Lisbon with all the conditions for startups to grow and to be there, to meet the investors, to meet like enablers. So happy to receive you, Jerry. And actually, if you're speaking with Marta, her offices are there. So speak with her about it. Thank you very much, Matteo.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Do you want to be part of Breaking Banks Europe? Reach out and learn more about the opportunity to be featured in one of our shows. With over 1.6 million listeners and counting, Breaking Banks Europe is bound to become the place to advance critical dialogue in Europe and the UK fintech scene. Reach out on Instagram or Twitter at Breaking Banks EU or go to www.provoke.fm.
I'm here with Marta Palmeiro, co-founder of Student Finance, but also an old friend. She's also in the board of Portugal FinTech. Marta, welcome to the show.
Hello, Matteo. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So in the first part of the show with João, we mentioned an initiative that I believe we should talk about a bit more with you. which is this FinLab initiative that basically put together the three regulators in Portugal and allowed fintech startups who wanted to sort of get access to the Portuguese market to have a direct line with these regulators in a sort of like ask anything type of setting. Could you tell us a little bit more about yourself first? And then you already know what your question is going to be.
Yeah, that's perfect. So just to give you a little bit of context over my, you know, background and where I come from. So I started my career in Credit Suisse in investment banking. I was in London and Madrid for 10 years. So I have that more traditional finance background. In 2016, I started focusing a bit more on fintech, exploring. I angel invested for a couple of years. Very interesting. I think it's where I started getting my hands a bit dirtier, analyzing deeply the businesses. And then, you know, more recently, I got involved on Portugal FinTech, where I am on the board, where basically how we approach the market is into listening to what fintechs in Portugal and generally financial innovation ecosystem needs. And we try to solve that and really promote the solutions. I'm very focused, so I'm the co-founder of Student Finance as well, where basically what we are doing is empowering access to education through income share agreements. I'm doing this with co-founders of Uniplaces, which is also a very well-known startup in Portugal. And it's very interesting to see that I think all the things tie up together in the sense that when you look at the Portuguese ecosystem, startup generally, but also fintech, you see that a lot has evolved and actually matured over the past couple of years. Just tying this up to the FinLab, and to actually the genesis of the growth of Portugal FinTech in itself, the number of startups emerging in Lisbon and achieving a maturity stage and, you know, like more developed stage, it's very pronounced. One thing that we kind of recurrently, when in contact with the market, would come along actually is that the regulatory side of things, especially in an ecosystem like FinTech, it's super important. And people were still very, very in the dark when it came to the access to the regulators. And that's why when we, at Portugal FinTech, we started thinking how we could address this. And we kind of approached the regulators who were with a very, very positive attitude into understanding the ecosystem, into wanting to have a much deeper dialogue with the startups. And so we created the Portuguese FinLab, which is an innovation hub. Where startups can apply. We have had two cohorts. Each of them were selected five startups, which had a very privileged access to the regulators in the sense that we promoted a deep dialogue into the understanding of the regulatory requirements for the businesses to operate in Portugal. But I would actually like to highlight the two things that came out of it, which for me were very positive, which is on the one side, we had on the first batch, there were over 40 applications, and the three regulators, so Bank of Portugal, CMVM, and ISTF, they sat and they had meetings with each of the 40 applicants. So they really got deep into contact with the ecosystem, really understanding what were their pains. Then obviously there was a deeper work with the finalists, but just saying that there was a very big change in terms of opening the door and really materializing that, you know, the regulators are here. Also, a thing that was very different from other innovation hubs that are there in the market, it's the fact that actually you have the three regulators sitting in the same place and having like a common voice. It's super important because, you know, a lot of times people need to engage with several of them for the same project. And obviously, if you need to engage with them on a separate basis, it kind of triples the amount of work and effort that startups need to do. And, you know, obviously, we all know that time and speed for startups is something super, super important. Also, a metric that for me was very, very important is the fact that 30% of the applicants on the first batch were international. So actually, what the message that this passed out to the market was not only that the Portuguese fintech ecosystem is open for business, and we want to do this better. We want that the companies have, you know, the regulation framing in an early stage, so they can have this, you know, the logo was regulated by design. So how can we make really the access and the regulatory frameworks a baseline for the setup of the projects? But also that a lot of international startups were looking to come into Portugal. And we're actually feeling, you know, very welcome to have this dialogue and to having this open door to understanding what were the requirements to come and to operate in Portugal. So for me, that's two amazing things that I think have come into the market and fueled and even potentiated a lot more of the new startups being created.
Indeed, indeed. So Marta, I put myself into the shoes of, you know, All these European tech guys that are seeing Portugal as almost the new Eldorado for tech, right? And it's funny because since I lived there, in the past 2, 3, 4 years, everyone is saying, "Oh yeah, yeah." Portugal, of course. I mean, you're there because of the taxes or, you know, whatever, right? And people don't realize that actually. I mean, I'm not saying that tax is a good reason to move anywhere in the world, but it's not the reason why people go to Portugal. I mean, people go to Portugal because of the easiness of doing business, because of the quality of life. But talk to us a little bit and actually put yourself into a perspective of someone who is speaking to like a couple of millions of people in Europe. Right? Why is Portugal in the radar as far as tech and recently fintech, is concerned? You know, because let's not give for granted, stuff that for us who live there are sort of a no-brainer. Right? So, sell a little bit the Portugal ecosystem to the rest of Europe. You see what I mean, right?
I totally do. I think the first thing is it's talent. So I think you have a lot of very good people. Obviously, the salaries are still very competitive when you compare to the majority of European countries. And so obviously, for startups, that is crucial. You can do much more with the same funding, and that really matters. And it's not that you're jeopardizing the quality at all. So in Portugal, you have very good talent. Most people do speak English. And so, in that sense, you can really create very effective teams on the technology side with connection to the rest of the world. Because I think a critical thing that Portugal has an ecosystem has been doing, and I think being very successful at, is in being very open and welcoming. So one thing that we certainly feel is that companies from abroad come to Portugal, and in a very short time frame, I think they get really all the support they need to set up, to get information, to put a team in place. Now I must be honest that it's becoming harder and harder to hire talent. Obviously, salaries are starting to increase a little bit, but that's also, I think, a very positive outcome. Lisbon, in terms of the fintech ecosystem, it's very international. So even if you look at the companies of Portuguese fintechs and fintech companies moving to Portugal, you have very, very international mindsets. You go to the fintech house where my office is, like for instance, my team at Student Finance, we are a complete international company, Argentinians, Portuguese, you have, people from Mexico. But if you go through the house, it's people speaking English all around. You have all sorts of international companies moving to Lisbon, and people are very, very welcoming. I think this is a critical part. Also, one thing that I think has been happening recently that I think is very important as well is the fact that the ecosystem is very collaborative, and banks have moved to a more, well, banks generally and partners to fintechs have become much more open to the collaboration. And being a small ecosystem means that you can access these partners very well. Something we have done at Portugal Fintech and Fintech House is really promote this access to partners. Some of our partners that sponsor the house are Accenture, Visa, Murajli Tomer on the legal side. But the point is that, you know, like, for instance, looking at Visa and Accenture, you know, these are international powerhouses. And the fact is that when you come here, you do access their top-tier talents and management in a very efficient way. And this is happening. This is not theoretical, right? You go to the house, you have access to these people. That's really the concept and the idea on why, you know, and the benefits of being there. And you don't have access to Portuguese talent. You have access to their global network. And that's the mindset of the Portuguese fintech ecosystem. And for me, that's very different from a lot of other European jurisdictions. And it's not that we are blocking other companies to access this network. We are actually fostering that because we really believe that everybody benefits by having a strong global fintech ecosystem based in Portugal. And for me, that's really awesome.
I second, you know, everything you said, you know, about, you know, the openness and the willingness to link to the rest of the ecosystem. Now, you know, before with Joao, we were talking, you know, more on the, like, investment side. Now, let's talk a little bit, you know, as with your eyes as an entrepreneur. You know, tell us a little bit more about student finance to start with, and also maybe mention two or three startups that you think are, like, hot in the fintech space, and you know, so that we give visibility to some of the things that are happening, right? Because me, for example, as a you know, as a Portuguese you know, resident, I see that there is some gaps right now in the market. I'm thinking about, like, on the wealth management space, for example. You know, I see that there are sort of solutions that are naturally evolving in other, maybe more mature ecosystem that hasn't arrived yet, you know, in the Portuguese one. And I know it's only a matter of time, but you have certainly a much closer view. So please, your own and the others.
Yeah, perfect. So, you know, at Student Finance, our, you know, main objective is we're in touch with the tech scene. I say, actually, that's why we really started going to here, is there, you're starting to feel a very big lack of talent. The mismatch of talent in technology and digital skills, it's evident throughout the world. You know, like, the skills gap, it's something that it's preeminent. It's growing more and more, and we need to make sure that society is recycling and getting access to the education and the skills that we require as a society in a whole. What we were seeing there is that there is still a very big barrier in terms of accessing this education. Technology boot camps are booming and taking this space, which means the short-term education that in, you know, let's say typically 3 to 9 months can convert you into a junior developer, giving you very good tools as a data scientist, cybersecurity officer, etc. And so what we do is we offer income share, we partner with schools so that they can offer income share agreements to their students, which means basically that it's a different payment method instead of you paying the tuition fee up front. This is a deferred payment based on your future salary. So people go through the program, they don't pay anything up front. When they get out and get a job earning above
the threshold, it's like
Candela,
Martha, right?
Then they pay a percentage of their income for, let's say, 10% of income for 36 months. Which actually creates for us a very, very positive outcome is on the focus of the quality of the education and on the job placement side, because it connects pretty much then education with the job market, which is something that is really lacking in the current education system as a whole. And so it has been super rewarding to be on this space. Actually, one side that is particularly important for us and we're working a lot is on the regulatory side, you know, on the fintech, when you are bringing models that are very innovative and there are not clear legal frameworks to work, it's a challenge. It's certainly where we are, but also on the other side, it feels much more rewarding to be doing something that we really, really see that the market demands and that really changes lives. So we are really giving a chance for people to have access to education that they otherwise could not do based on the current, you know, loan system or paying the tuition fee up front and accessing this education.
This is amazing, actually, Marta. And you know that we at Fintech Stage, we launched this initiative that's called Time Pledge, that is actually addressed to African entrepreneurs to coach them on soft skills. So we believe that, you know, one of the missing opportunities, you know, that most of the African entrepreneurs can't catch is, you know, being coached on, you know, how to pitch their idea, how to raise funds, how to like bootstrap their company, and some very basic, you know, business model canvas skills that they don't get because, you know, they don't have access, or simply because there is not enough opportunities in their own city. So we launched Time Pledge. And the way we describe Time Pledge is that we are the umbrella of soft skills. And actually, we could say we are the student finance of soft skills, right? Because you guys are focused on coding. And so, sir, I didn't realize that your model was so similar. And I think it's super powerful. And certainly, you know, next time I'm back, we will talk about how to work together and how to even export this this model into like Portuguese speaking African countries, because there is a great match.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And then just touching base on the facts, I think that, you know, like student finance and a lot of the Portuguese, you know, fintech projects, we certainly look at the whole market and we want to explore a lot of synergies, how to grow projects. I think in Portugal, you don't see people building a lot of projects just to stay in Portugal. I think the market is small, right? So it kind of puts the baseline requirement of you being more ambitious and creating a more international business from start date. And I think that's something that certainly it's very important for us at Student Finance, but that I feel generally on the ecosystem as a whole. And it's very interesting to see that even on the investment side and funding, you have top-tier investors from all over the world paying a lot of attention to what's happening in Portugal and funding early stage companies as well, not only later stage, which obviously was already happening with FeedZai, et cetera, but even on the early stage. I think certainly Portugal has placed itself as a very credible hub, and this is starting to get out there, certainly, I would say.
Indeed, Marta. And actually, I think it's a great way to, you know, without knowing, of course, but both you and Joao, you have closed your sort of interview or half of the show, you know, saying the same thing, is that, you know, Portugal really thinks global. I mean, they don't think Portugal because of the mentality, because the English is perfect, because it's a hub to a number of, is a natural hub, you know, not only to the rest of the Portuguese-speaking countries, which is kind of a very big chunk of the planet, but also strategic, you know, towards the West. There is actually my friend Pedro, who, you know, for years, he builds a bridge between, you know, Lisbon and Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah,
and
Pedro is great.
Indeed. And you know, I was in San Francisco last week, and I opened up my speech by saying, hey guys, you know, I come from Lisbon. Lisbon is pretty much like San Francisco. We got the same bridge, only, you know, with the price of a coffee here in San Francisco, yeah, you get a good meal in Lisbon. You should come, right? Something like that. And everyone, you know, laugh and smile and welcome this sort of opening, because I believe that Portugal, you know, is only, you know, is getting hotter and hotter, and the fact that he has also, you know, he's playing a role, he has played a role, you know, in the tech scene, fintech is a natural outcome, right? Because financial services is possibly the trickiest one in terms of, you know, because it's a regulated market and all that. But as Portugal is a bridge to countries where financial inclusion is fundamental, and you guys are at the core of it, what you do, I think that the perspective is really great. Marta, thank you so much.
To finish quickly, I think even more when now on this, you know, remote culture is becoming more and more the standard. It was like wearing jeans 20 years ago, right? You know, culture is changing. And I think, you know, in a reality where remote is becoming more and more preeminent, you know, an ecosystem like, you know, Portugal can even frost more because companies certainly can build more in here, but still be overly connected, you know, and still operate anywhere else. So I would say this will even make us more competitive and more a reality as an ecosystem.
Marta, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
And I promise I'll come visit you at the FinTech House next week when I'm back to Lisbon.
Please do. It's amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. That was Zoom in Portugal. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you again, Marta, and it's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.